Welcome to The Undeniable, brought to you by OverAbove. In marketing, everything has changed. It's undeniable. But how can you navigate this dynamic new business and technology landscape today for exponential marketing success tomorrow? Hosted by OverAbove's Chief Innovation Officer, Devin Speer, The Undeniable explores that question with industry experts across diverse categories, from technology innovators to C-level leaders to sales and marketing veterans. Now here's your host, Devin Speer.
Today we are joined by my friend, Stephen Fuller, owner of architectural firm Stephen Fuller Designs in Atlanta. Stephen has received more than 40 awards of excellence for superior design, including three Best in American Living Awards from the National Association of Home Builders. Stephen's abiding philosophy of design is pretty simple. It's that a home should live in harmony with its surroundings, and that home is a place where the best of the past coexists with the demands and opportunities of today.
In my world, it has to do with, you could begin with the word shelter. I mean, I've really focused mostly on, and my career's been focused on housing. And the idea of classic architectural beauty was always something that, that language is important. And it's not really just the architecture. Landscape architecture is, and what I call architectural interior design, not decorative design, but, millwork and the attached, the context, the house, and the immediate interior. I always say, if you could, pick up the house and shake it, and everything that stays attached, is the architectural interiors. Those fireplaces, mantles, staircases, core cabinetry. When you put that's the envelope that that we work with as residential architects, and it was always my love to keep it beautiful, to keep it, let it have a distinct style. If it was going to be Southern or going to be English or French or Georgian or whatever, to understand what sort of genetic detailing needed to change, what shape, what proportion needed to change, what details need to change, to make it, to give it a completely different pedigree. It's the matching of the personality of the house with the personality of the place and the personality of the person. Those things, when they come together, it's my job to marry it to their expectations in terms of a budget. That's always one of the things I bring up and I include with my clients, is we always talk about that. We always talk about their expectations, what it's going to take to get it, to make it happen. I always encourage them. I work with a lot of really great contractors. Let's get a contractor involved very early, because I know I have a great feel for what things are going to cost, but I'm not going to build your house. So we need your contractor or a contractor early that can participate in what we're doing.
So, our podcast is called The Undeniable, and we want to focus on things that represent these massive shifts and change in our world today. Obviously, we try to focus on marketing. We'll come back to marketing before we wrap up. But you just said two key words, Steve: evolving and technology. So share with our audience just a little bit about the evolving tech of practicing architecture.
Yeah.
Just riff a little bit on going from paper to software in terms of design.
Oh, wow. In the late 80s, early 90s, we didn't even have a computer at my office. We had the old Selectric typewriters,
Yeah, it was the mid 80s, IBM PC, PC Junior, the Macintosh 1984. So mid to late 80s.
Yeah. So we had, even at Tech, there were studios just like the old, Frank Lloyd Wright days, big drafting. I had a, 8 foot long drafting table with a, a T square and all that stuff. all the equipment that you had. So, yeah, I grew up.
Do you have a mechanical eraser? Did you ever have one of those?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It depends on what, you know, we were drawing on what we called 1000H, a certain kind of paper or vellum, you know, was what we did all of our CAD drawings on. And so, you know, that's how I got into architecture is as a child, as a kid, I liked to draw. But I was not talented enough to make any money doing it as an artist. But I learned how to watercolor, and I knew how I could draw quickly. And so my practice when I started, you know, everything was hand drawn, and I was the guy that you know that was fueling the conveyor belt of design, so to speak, and it would go through eventually to my CAD studio. We had probably over 100. Staff members that or more at our heyday, probably five divisions of people. And but it all started with me hand drawing. So I'm sort of famous or notorious for you know, very prolific abilities to design and draw with trace paper. And so all my meetings with I would burn through, and once clients would start talking, I'd start drawing, and I would literally draw their house almost in front of them, floor plans, one level, next level. That's my version of taking notes. So it got to the point where, it's sort of in my heyday of hand drawing things, I would design, I could probably design 10 or 12 houses in a day. I mean, I was just moving that quickly. I mean, it was just, but that's the kind of volume that we were dealing with as a firm. And, but to, you know, it was really, and that's the way I operated. I had some incredible illustrators. I had guys that were so much more talented than me, you know. So we probably had four illustrators, you know, that were making $100,000 a year, just constantly full time watercoloring and doing beautiful perspectives. And I have a vault of, still have all that artwork today, and it's really you know, priceless sort of. Stuff for me, but what happened when the housing crisis hit we really felt it in 07 and 2008 and so forth. It was a life changing event, and so for lots of reasons. But one of the things that happened as I had to start paring down my business in terms of staffing, you know, there was a period that. There were really sort of dark days, but I ended up at that time period. I had the extra time where I started learning to design on the computer.
Yeah, and that would have been 2010.
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, from 8 through 12. Okay, you know, the rebound in housing was extremely.
So would you say that was late in your career? I mean, compared to.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, for me, thank God I started, you know, when I was 8 years old practically, because I'm 61 now. And so, yeah, it, you know, this was, you know, 25, 30 years into my business.
Yeah.
When I had to start sort of and I'm sure every architect, particularly residential, you know, went through that same thing.
Sure.
It was a really difficult time. But in retrospect, that's when I started trying to push myself to learn to work with 3D modeling programs. I particularly use SketchUp is the one I use. But
try to give our listeners a sense of what software, this is the undeniable change in architecture and design,
yeah.
What software has allowed great thinkers and designers to achieve that was probably not even possible in the paper world?
Well, yeah, like I said, you know, I love the, and a lot of people are still nostalgic and love the, you know, the honesty of the hand-drawn things, and they love watching it happen. It is very romantic to watch someone that can actually do that kind of stuff.
It's kind of like the language. You talk about the language of
architecture. Yeah, it is. But it's certainly not pretty to watch it happen electronically. But just to give you an example, and it was not a quick transition. I will say that. It was one of the most painful processes for me personally to have to go through to learn to work that way. I cannot tell you how many times I would – sit down to try to start working on a project that way, and then I would just panic because I would get tangled up in the programs and quickly run back to the drawing board and finish it that way. And it just took me forever to get the courage to try to do a whole house, you know, design electronically. But I did. And today, you know, so when, like I was telling you about this big church, it's actually a lot of the drawings in the studio or in the conference room that we're in. It's a really a fabulous building. I mean, I don't do a lot of that type of architecture, but it's a really period style building, and it's, 20,000 square feet, and inside and out, it's really a beautiful space. Well, that whole building, I've essentially drawn everything myself electronically as a three-dimensional object, inside. So when I am drawing it, I'm actually building it
in virtual
like I'm
space.
Standing inside the space, or I'm moving. If I need a window, I'll go out and I'll literally build that window in.
Hey, think about that for a second, though. You said, I am an architect. I'm not a builder. But with the advent of SketchUp and other tools, and the AutoCAD world probably has more things I'm not aware of. But with the advent of these software systems, you are a virtual builder. So you're an architect, and now you are really building in a virtual world, where before, when you were limited to paper, you didn't want to build physical things, moving atoms around. You're drawing in two dimensions. But now you are building and designing because software has enabled that. Isn't that kind of
absolutely? Yeah, it's very, very immersive. And actually, when you're talking about even the drawing days, the person that is drawing and sketching or painting is in that world. I'm actually in that space as well. Like if I'm detailing a pretty limestone cap or a curve on a chimney or a window header, I'm in it in my mind as in a three-dimensional way. Yeah. So even though it's a 2D line, I know when that pin moves that it's moving in or out three-dimensionally in my mind as I draw it. It's not all, and if you're really a great illustrator, classically trained, by the time you paint it, shade it, and so forth, all those layers and dimensions do come out of a 2D drawing.
Michelangelo.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you're in these programs today, you physically are in a 3D space. Now, I'm not in a virtual space. It's on a screen, but I'm. And obviously, that's the next evolution, where you can
augmented reality,
through AR, where you're actually in the space. But yes, I'm building it. The commands now are so second nature that I don't really think about what it takes to pick this up or stretch it or pull it or whatever. I'm doing it subconsciously, so that as I am designing, I'm physically stretching, building, moving, placing things, and it's just a different way to create. And it's the power of it today is when it was always a frustration for me when in the old days when I would draw things as beautiful as they were and accurate as they were, it had to go downstream, to be detailed in our. We use MicroStation was the CAD program that we use. And it's particularly if it's something new where you don't have a component. Like when I draw a column, they would have columns already in their programs and they would, he means a column. So they would put that column. But that column that they're putting in is a little different than the one I actually drew. And so things would always lose some of their detailing or the beauty as they would go be translated into CAD. So you had to really a CAD operator, a draftsman that had been with me for a long time would know what I was doing, and they would adjust what they're doing. So it's a very close match to what I drew.
You're saying today you're in control of all
of today,
it.
Yeah. When I create it today, it is, which is one of the things that slows you down when you're creating it, is that it doesn't, there is no fudging. It, you know, that window is 2 feet 6 inches wide or 2 feet 4 inches. I mean, it is a extremely detailed, realistic component that you're applying.
And absolutism.
Yeah. So things have, if they're off a fraction, you know, it doesn't close. It won't work. There's problems with the models.
Yeah.
And so everything has to be, you know, methodically detailed. But again, once you learn that language, you learn that sort of yoga move, it, and you don't fight it, and you can actually bend and stretch and move those ways. Now, what you're talking about is the creative process and the detailing are all happening at one time.
Yeah.
So it just becomes a process of extraction now. So when I finish a design, when I've built it, it is just now sliced and extracted and detailed. It's no longer, it's not changed. It's just expanded in terms of, or deconstructed in terms of what I've built.
Yeah.
That's what the CAD drawings are doing. And so it just has collapsed, you know, from a manpower standpoint, it's put, and the other thing that's so powerful, we're talking about just the CAD side, the detailing side. It also, from a rendering, as I said, I had all those high-priced illustrators that would spend days.
They were doing watercolors, for example.
Yeah, doing fabulous interior perspectives and exterior streetscapes, you know, looking down multiple rows of buildings. And today, again, the whole marketing side is now coming out of that same effort.
So let's talk about
it's crazy.
it's an exciting time to be a designer of all things.
Yes,
the software and tools are extending the human brain. You just said another interesting word that we're going to explore just for a second here is marketing. You know, your work in the 80s, 90s, and all your affiliation with big publications like Southern Living exposed you to the ability to take, you can have a great home that never gets photographed and published and is kind of invisible, or you can have a great home that that gets picked up as the home of the year or is featured in a magazine, and it can be your bestseller. So what's the difference between marketing great places? Is that the key to creating success through architecture via marketing?
Well, when I started, because I had so many clients, I said, let's just prepare some designs that are done before they ever get there. And I'll put them in this wonderful catalog and I'll illustrate it. And once we did that, the very first thing we did, we printed 5,000 copies, and I direct mailed free 3,000 copies to builders across the Southeast. I got a list of home builders, and we sent them this beautiful book with a letter introducing, you know, our firm. And, you know, within a few months, the phone just started ringing off the hook. And so that's, you know, that sort of foray into marketing, the only reason I was even interested in it is they were things that I had already drawn.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't going to burden me and all my custom work. It would just amplify what we were doing. And of course, it turned out to be a great move. And so we, sort of launched us off. And at that point, I met through some connections, a wonderful guy named Burton Craig, who Burton was at Southern Living, and he ran their homes department. And particularly, they used to always have plan of the month, that's what it was, page in that magazine. And it was always the most read page in the magazine, black and white.
In the 90s?
This was, late 80s, all through the 90s.
Yeah.
And so Burton, and they always did what they called their idea house, one house per year that they would bring in advertisers. And it was a big editorial piece in the magazine. And so Burton and I hit it off. And so I started doing some collections for them. And ultimately, I started traveling to New York and met a lot of great publishers there with Hearst and Hachette and Better Homes and Gardens and all those kind of things. So we, again, that was pre-internet, or internet was just in its infancy. Yeah. So it was a catalog.
I think by that being internet, the Web 1.0, and today we're clearly Web maybe.
Yeah, 3.0. And that was a great fit for me because of our illustration skills, and I worked with a lot of great graphic designers and publishing firms, but I recognize that. So my brand, people got to know me through all those affiliations, sort of broadcasting me out there in ways that I wouldn't have ever been. And there were Southern Accents and a lot of Shelter magazines that featured our work and so forth. So that,
but you mentioned the other day a home you designed in Tennessee that has gotten a lot of exposure, a lot of press. It's been and today that might mean Pinterest or Instagram. So, but you could have designed that same home and it could have been deep in the woods in Alabama and never be photographed. And it doesn't make the home any less grand, any less beautiful. It's just one gets a lot of digital exposure, the other one doesn't. So, I guess it's just interesting that that's the power of marketing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Today, the opportunity, because of the internet and all the things you mentioned, to reach directly, the old publishing days where you had to sort of filter through printed materials, are still there, but they're certainly not the only way to reach the general public. But if you're going to, in my personal case, there's no need to engage at that level anymore. Again, unless you have a system or a product that can handle the volume of people, it doesn't do any good to be, in 50,000 Pinterest likes. You don't want your phone ringing with 10,000 people if what you do is sit around and design a lot of custom one-of-a-kind things.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, unless you're going to try to parlay that into some sort of, endorsement business or whatever. So unlike the plan books of the 80s and 90s, really libraries and of housing that are appropriate for today. Whether they be, which we can get into in a later discussion about ADUs and different kind of building types, different community types that are relevant today, okay? And having, we've talked before, instead of the house plan analogy, think of it almost as a kit of parts or vending machine analogy,
right?
Where we have housing types based on sizes and demographics and styles that are sort of loaded in this vending machine of components that that then can be matched up to another one of your words through placemaking into very specific regional, local little enclaves. It could be a single building. Could be a little a wonderful little community.
Yeah.
Could be a large place with lots of small, interesting spaces in between. But the key is to have those building types at the ready, digitally, three-dimensionally, and so then it becomes just an interplay between land planning and the architecture. And at that point, when those things fully connect, which is what we are really working on today, that's the point then to reengage through marketing and media. It could be just in a specific way. Like if it's a specific community in Tennessee, you know, then we'll market to that region or the people that would want to make that a new place to live.
Yeah. I guess I'm intrigued with the fact that technology and the stuff that I tend to focus on, the speed of change, is opening up new avenues, whole new frontiers for home buyers to discover and explore. And it goes back to the idea that with SketchUp, for example, you are a virtual builder. So you're just kind of sharing this virtual world that you build through the things called the internet and social media and websites and introducing that to a much larger audience that could have never gotten exposed to it. So it raises the stakes of design, because you know that there's more and more people that can experience it faster than in the old world, which is a two-dimensional sheet of paper. They weren't able to really experience the 3D world. And think about what's going to happen just in the next few years. Augmented reality is really unstoppable. It's coming. So,
well, yeah. In the old days, you know, we worked very hard on a flat, you know, two-dimensional pages of a catalog, you know, to illustrate things that the customer could engage with, and it worked beautifully for the day. So things are no different today. You know, the process is so much more immersive, and there's so many more ways to get to it. So the technology of Hollywood and of gaming and so forth is merging into serious, in this case, architecture and housing. And, you know, those things, in a lot of ways, housing and construction are sort of, because it's such a you know, it even surpasses the automobile industry for you know, difficulty of execution in terms of building, because it's site driven and all the problems with construction. So construction is sort of a late adapter a lot of times to technology, but at least in our world, we see it. It's here. It's been here. It's moving quickly. And it really has changed the industry, and it's going to change, continue to change housing just in phenomenal ways, you know, moving forward.
If everything else is changing so fast, the physical process of construction is got to change. It's got to be disrupted, just like we were talking about the other day about other disruptors.
To your point, especially bigger custom homes that are still built, on, you know, piece by piece on site. But, you know, there are a lot of advancements in construction with panelized construction and actually building really efficient, wonderful things in factories.
Yeah.
And certainly with houses being smaller, but modular components. So to your point, yeah, when you build that way in a controlled environment, it's quicker. It's more efficient. Pricing comes down, and so that's also, at least in certain areas of our practice, those are really great opportunities for us to partner and to associate with companies that not only do that, but are working hard to excel and do it in extremely efficient ways.
Just imagine the day, Steve, when you are working in your 3D drawing tools, you press a button and it literally goes to a 3D factory and is printed and then picked up on a crane and delivered to the site. Like, that's not a far-fetched. We have all the pieces today, from software to mass scale 3D printing, where you really would 3D print a house from your desktop here in Atlanta, Georgia. Tell our listeners what you think people are looking for today in homes. What are they looking for in terms of functionality and features and you know, the place? What are trends? That's what I'm getting to. What are the trends of home design in the year 2020?
In general, families are smaller, so housing is getting more efficient and smaller.
Yeah.
You know, big rambling houses of, again, the 80s or 90s even, or 70s, you know, or with master bedrooms on the upper level and stairs and things like that are really, really dated at this point. And so smaller houses that are but connected to each other into little interesting enclaves, and in smaller, friendly environments, I would say, either if they're connected to towns, they're within walking distance of commerce, and or they're, because of the whole, you know, digital working world and you know, the internet, you know, we see a really huge boom in people wanting to work remotely and, yeah, and to get out and to get back into nature, lakes, mountains, agrarian environments, places where, you know, the air's cleaner and life is you know, more natural. And so in all those cases, you know, it dovetails right in with technology, houses that are smaller, that there's still a sense of community. And, you know, we're trying to respond to that. We're doing a lot of infill, small, what we call pocket communities, that are a lot of small towns in Carolinas and Georgia, you know, would welcome, particularly places that have large new employment centers like car manufacturing. So there's a need for different housing. There's a need for new housing, more affordable housing, or what we would call attainable things, flexible design. So that's really kind of what we're focusing on. The typical, again, the environment that I cut my teeth on, that I helped build, that I grew up in, the suburban, what we called 5-4 and a door.
I love that. I love that saying.
Yeah, the old, you know, four bedrooms, you know, and two car garage, and 100-foot suburban lot with a swim tennis club. You know, that housing type is really gone. And
gone forever?
Well, I mean, they're still there, and
but you won't make a resurgence. It's not like this is a fad.
In no way, shape, or form. I mean, they're not in the quantities. I mean, that was, you know, an enormous need for that type of housing back when I started. And like I said, today it's a simpler, smaller, but quality and connectivity and simplicity. You know, simple, open, clean, indoor-outdoor spaces, and more affordable. You know, we see just a tremendous need for to get rid of a lot of the inefficiencies and the waste of space in houses, you know, that used to be there, and flexibility. So that's kind of, you know, I would say the biggest driver. There's still, you know, the big marquee houses, the big trophy projects that are out there, and we participate in many of those. But that's not really where the mass, the big trends are.
Yeah.
In this particular area, there's 12 or 13 extended stay hotels here in this market that used to be the Motel 6 and the Guest Inn and Days Inn and you know, the little small hotels you know, have not evolved. They're now dated, and they've turned into housing, you know, for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people are living for extended periods of time in these hotels.
Just in this local market?
Thousands? Just in this market.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Imagine what's happening across the country.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of people that have fallen out and fallen through the cracks in society. You know, they haven't been able to maintain, you know, for health reasons and lots of of problems. And it's really, it's the last stop
yeah.
before, you know, homelessness, wow. essentially.
Wow.
Well, the space between the hotels and homelessness is living in your car. Through technology and lots of other of advancements, you know, I have a special desire to help try to create some affordable places for people that could not otherwise even have a place to live.
I wish we had more time to talk about all that, and we have gone long here.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one final closing question, my friend. This is because I have to ask this specifically to you because you are a passionate person in all aspects of your life and certainly in the architectural realm. So what inspires you the most?
What gets me up every day and is really the change, the almost a pull. I feel pulled forward through, you know, toward a goal. It goes back to your word practice. You know, I feel like I'm not even, or I'm getting closer to reaching, I guess, my personal potential. Okay, yeah. Of what I'm capable of, and I'm the guy to do it. I have so many things that come in this door that are just way, way beyond my capabilities, and I literally, you know, am just frozen, thinking there's just no way I can accomplish what needs to be done. And but I'll get in there and I'll try to do it, and sure enough, you know, we'll pull it off. And so, you know, to me, there's something really beautiful and magical about what's ahead.
Yeah,
I can't always. It's not. In some ways, it never really gets here, because when you do get to it, it's kind of like watching the heat come up off the expressway when you would drive. You know, it's always in the distance, and when you, you know, you never reach it, but you see it, and so, you know, I see all these things ahead of me that are challenging me, you know, to do it, to grow, and I don't, you know, I don't know how long I'll be able to have this, you know, this experience of life, I guess. But you know, it really, I know we're not even. I feel like we're not even close. I feel like I'm starting, you know, where I was in 1981. You know, and here it is going to be, you know, 2021, and I feel as good as I did back then, and so I'm really super excited about the things that you and I see out there working together, and what lies ahead. I'm eager to see what we can accomplish.
You are not a practicing architect, Stephen Fuller. You are an accomplished architect, and you're beautiful human being, and I'm grateful to call you my friend, and I want to encourage all of our listeners to check out your website, stephenfuller.com. If you're in the market to build a house, you need to call Steve. But more importantly, you know, think about what he shared with us today on the Undeniable podcast, because design is a language unto itself, and I think there's inherent beauty in design, and you exemplify that. And I just want to thank you for your time.
Thanks, Devin.
All right, brother.
This has been The Undeniable. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe. For more information on this or any episode of The Undeniable, please visit www.overabove.com/podcast.